Well, you know, we are really good friends at Book and Bottle, and I'm Annette Weiser. I'm the Radio St. Pete News Director, and with me tonight is John Miles, who, I'm telling you, I feel like Howdy Doody standing next to him, because this man interviews people better than anyone. But with that being said, we are delighted that we've been allowed to come tonight. Book and Bottle is a partner of Radio St. Pete. Dominic Howarth, can we have a Dominic thing? He's not here, but he is on Radio St. Pete once a month to talk about books. And this is the kickoff of our Live Life Better author series with John Miles. And I want to thank every one of you for joining us. I see some future podcasters here. I see some of our current podcasters here. So, you know, John says you were born to live your passion. Well, thanks to John Miles, I've lived mine. I decided to launch an online on-air magazine for Radio St. Pete. This is all your fault, John. All your fault. And, you know, having done this in January, let me tell you something. It's like working with these podcasters, and in particular, John, it's like Christmas morning opening presents every day we're in studio. Our studio's at Thrive DTSP. John, with 48 million downloads on multiple platforms. Come on, let me get 20 more. So, John hooked me on his passion when he wrote, "We're often pulled in countless directions and bombarded by expectations and noise. When you say yes, what truly resonates, you open a door to opportunities and nurture your growth and purpose." So I'm going to ask all of you today to listen carefully to John. What are you saying yes to today? And what, more importantly, are you saying no to? I'm going to ask you, no or yes? How many yeses are here? Who's open to the possibility? Okay, there's no naysayers here. So I'd like you to meet John Miles in a nutshell. He's a leading high-performance coach, author, speaker, decorated veteran, and multi-industry CEO. He's a highly quoted, viewed, and followed personal development trainer, and he is the host of the highly rated and award-winning Passion Struck podcast, which won the Stevie IBA Best Business Book of the Year. Listen, I'm a shameless huckster. I love everything that John does. So, you know, here is the really important part. This is what John's going to talk about tonight. This is a transformative framework for unlocking your purpose, not his purpose, not my purpose, but your purpose, right? For a capacity for growth. And before I turn this over to John, I'm just going to say, Passion Struck isn't just a book or a podcast. It's a roadmap to the life of significance. And I hope that all of you will embrace this. John, with no further ado, is going to read an excerpt. Take it away, John.
Okay, well... Well, first off, thank you, everyone who came. It means the world to me that you're all here, and I'm glad that we sold out this event. And thank you for Book and Bottle for putting this on, and I love, since I'm a local person, to support the local bookstores, so thank you very much, Andy. And Nanette, thank you for pulling this all together.
My pleasure.
So I am going to read from Chapter 15, and for those of you who aren't familiar with this book, the way it's organized is into three parts. So the first part, I introduce mindset shifts. The second part, I introduce behavior shifts. And the third section, I go into something that I call the psychology of progress. And that's where I'm going to be reading this from, is Chapter 15, which is the start of Never Ignore the Physics of Progress. And I'm going to start out with a quote from Nelson Mandela. "There's no passion to be found playing small and settling for a life that is less than the one that you are capable of living." And I'm going to jump forward, unlocking the three keys to an extraordinary life: aspiration, ambition, and actions. In a transformative interview with renowned executive coach and best-selling author Marshall Goldsmith, he shared profound insights about the three keys to living a truly extraordinary life. Goldsmith's words resonated powerfully. Aspiration, ambition, and actions. These three elements define a great life. Aspiration, the first key, compels us to ponder our purpose and the reason behind our existence on this earth. It extends far beyond simply showing up each day. Aspiration knows no finish line. It propels us to continuously reach for something greater. The second key, ambition, aligns our aspirations with tangible achievements. And ambition drives us to set meaningful goals that contribute to our overarching aspirations. These goals provide the framework for our accomplishments, but they're not an endpoint in themselves. Rather, they serve as milestones on our journey towards fulfillment. However, it's the third key, our actions, where the true essence of life resides. Our present actions, the choices we make, which I often call micro choices, the steps we take are what shape our reality. It is through our engagement in the day-to-day process of life itself that we manifest our aspirations and transform our ambitions into tangible outcomes. Yes, yet amidst this vast game of life, many individuals find themselves lost in the action phase. They become consumed by the never-ending cycle of busyness, failing to align their actions with their aspirations and ambitions. In doing so, they lose sight of the greater purpose and potential that awaits them. To lead an extraordinary life, which is the topic of today, it's imperative that we harmonize these three elements, aspiration, ambition, and actions. By ensuring their alignment, we tap into our innate capacity for greatness and fulfillment. We transcend the ordinary and embark on a journey of purpose, growth, and significant impact. And I go on to say, during an insightful interview that I did with my friend Robin Sharma, he beautifully encapsulated the essence of this concept. The thousand-mile journey begins with a single step. It's easy to put icons like Kobe, Jordan, Ali, Mandela, Elon Musk, Oprah Winfrey, Serena Williams, and many others on a pedestal. One of the things a lot of people do, John, is they say, well, these people are just not like us. Or they say these people are cut from a different cloth. And the reality is we all have gifts and natural talents. But the key is these people had an idea. And then they continually practiced. They stayed with the mission day after day until they went from being an amateur to a professional, a beginner to a master. Think of it another way. Let's say you're driving a car and it runs out of fuel. At this point, you have two options. First, you could put your hazard lights on and hope someone will come and help you, meaning you give up. Or you could choose the second option, opening the door, putting your shoulder against it, and beginning to push, taking action. What you would notice is that at first, pushing is extremely hard. Why? Because you have no momentum. But once you reach 5, 10, 100 yards down the road, suddenly you're rolling at a reasonable speed, bound for the nearest gas station. The same is true of actively pursuing your purpose. The most challenging part of any journey of this nature is the first step. You need to remind yourself that you've got nothing to lose. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
The Church of John Miles. John, what came first, the book or the podcast?
Well, that is an interesting question, and people would often say it's the podcast that came first because I have so many of the podcast interviews in the book. And the reality is I wrote the book or major portions of it first. And when I came up with this, I started to go to agents when I was still crafting the manuscript, and the agents said to me, well, you're known as a business executive. I was a Fortune 50 executive before. But no one knows you in this genre, and you really have no expertise in delivering a message of personal development. And so they said, you absolutely have no platform at all. And they were right from this standpoint. And so what they said is, you need to get out and speak. At this time, it was in the middle of the pandemic, and the only place I could speak was doing virtual sessions. And if you've ever done these, you can't really judge the feedback from the audience very well. So I looked at all my alternatives and thought, I will start a podcast and test the concepts out and see how well they resonate. And
then they resonate. 48 million downloads is just
later.
Unbelievable. John, you have a lot of chutzpah. You find people, you've called Seth Godin, you've interviewed all kinds of famous people. Tell us a little bit about some of your favorite interviews, and also, how do you have the chutzpah to get a hold of them? Do you get ghosted? I mean, how do you do it? Because as an interviewer, I take off my chapeau to you.
Well, I will tell you a a great example of this is I'm not sure if any of you know who Gabby Bernstein is, but I had Gabby, who's a New York Times number one bestselling author, on the show. But the backstory of this is she said no to me over 12 times. And I started asking her when the podcast was smaller. And as it got bigger, I kept going back and back and back. And finally, it was on that 12th time that she finally said yes. And I find that's what it's like. I think that there's just a time and place that these people are supposed to come on. And so when I get turned down, which is often, I don't look at it as a stopping point. I look at it as it's just the right opportunity in the universe hasn't opened up for the two of us to come together.
So, and, go ahead, please. No.
Yeah, so that's part of the process, but it's for every 10 to 20 people I reach out to, I get maybe one. So it's gotten, as the show has gotten a lot more popular, it's now a lot easier, but at first it was very difficult.
Who's on your want list still? Let's speak to the universe. Who do you still want?
Well, I wrote to Matthew McConaughey today. He's someone I've wanted to have on the show. I want Deepak Chopra.
I can help with.
I am trying to get Michael Jordan and a couple of the authors that I haven't gotten that I would still really love to get is Dan Heath, if anyone who knows who Dan is. He and his brother write a number of self-help books, and he's got one coming up. And then another person who I think it's going to be difficult is going to be Dr. Joe Dispenza. And Dr. Joe is very difficult to get on a show, so I'm hoping I will get him.
So I'm hoping that all of you will go onto the Facebook of these people and say, we just heard John Miles say that you would be terrific on my podcast. Manifest the universe, right, John? John, you had experience as a Navy officer and a Fortune 50 executive, and it shaped your approach to leadership and personal mastery. What did you learn hands-on that you've taken to this book, good or bad?
Well, what I think I learned from my time at the Naval Academy and then being a naval officer was two things. One, that anything that you want to accomplish, it's very difficult to do it on your own. And I mean, that the same thing goes with this book, the podcast, everything. If it wasn't for the people who supported me, I would have never gotten it accomplished. The other thing I learned is that, especially when you're in the service, the orders that you give have consequences, and some of those can be life-altering. I then took that in the Fortune 50 world. The biggest difference I found is while you're in the military, you give an order and people respond to it. When you are in the civilian world, you give an order, and that's not necessarily the same thing. So I really had to learn how do you win over hearts and minds of people, because leading in an organization is completely different than it is in the civilian world than it is in the military.
So you were inspired to write Passion Struck, and how has your personal journey influenced the themes in the book other than at work? Growing up, childhood, people you met, inspirations, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting, some of my son is in the room, and he probably doesn't remember this, but I remember I was a CIO at Dell. We were living in Austin, and I started to be getting these manifestations. When I would meditate, when I would think about things, I was getting this clear gut feeling that the path I was on was not the path I was destined to be on. And when I would really go further into this, I was getting these messages that were telling me I am supposed to serve the bored, beaten, broken, battered of the world. And here I am, this executive. I had no idea what that even meant. How am I supposed to serve that group of people? It's not as if you want to send a marketing message out that I'm going to serve the beaten and battered and broken of the world. So I didn't know what to do with it. So I think, like many people, I ignored it for a period of time. And I think what ends up happening is when you have a calling and you're ignoring it, it gets louder and it gets it starts coming to you in different ways. And so one of the most difficult exercises I put myself through was something that I call the one word exercise, meaning at the end of the day, if those are the people I'm trying to help, what is the one word I am trying to solve that all of them are facing? And I started going into this and I thought, well, maybe it could be apathy, or maybe it could be hopelessness or helplessness. And I started to think those are symptoms that these people feel, but it's not the core of what's happening. And at the core, what I really felt was a systematic thing that's happening today is so many people have a sense of unmattering. And that's exactly what I had reached. You get out of bed and you feel like nothing that you're doing matters. And I realized looking back that I'd been making other people's dreams come true, but I hadn't been making my own dreams come true. And it was time to cross that chasm.
You know, and I'm going to hold your feet to the fire and say, what is that one small actionable step that you took and that someone else can take to get to live more intentionally? What was the one step that you took that took you there, and what can our friends here and those listening to us can take to live more intentionally?
So I think it's easy to say if I had a do-over, I would have started on this journey sooner, because I wish I would have. I would have had more time to be creative and to do things, but time happens when it's supposed to. For me, there was really an impetus that happened that started this all. In November 2017, I had taken my daughter to school, dropped her off. She went to Shorecrest, and I went to the gym. I was going to Orange Theory at that point. That's where I've met several people in this room, was at Orange Theory. And that day, there was an electrical fire at the gym, and the fire trucks came, and I went home. What I didn't realize was that there was a perpetrator who had been canvassing me and watching my whereabouts. And so when I came home, I walked in on an active burglary where that assailant actually had my gun and pointed it at me. And so I was lucky to get out of that. And I was just starting to process it when 4 days later, one of my best friends, Tim, a local St. Pete person, unfortunately decided that his life wasn't worth living, and he ended up taking his life by jumping off the Skyway. Mm-hmm. And those two events really hit me over the next couple of months, and I just kind of came to this conclusion, what am I waiting for? And that was really the impetus that got me going. Now, once I reached that point, I went and started to see a career coach who is a psychologist, and he had me look at my life, and he had me imagine it just as these two stools that we're sitting on, and he said, I want you to think about how you've been living your life. And I realized that it was out of balance. I had been living my life for many, many years with one of those pillars underneath me being out of whack, and that was the constant grind. I was really focused on achievement, success, titles, worthy things. And what I really had to do was reorient my life on how I wanted that stool to look if I were living my life differently. And once you reach that point, then you've got to pick one thing in your life that needs more addressing than anything else, and pick that and start working on it. And once you do, what I found is that opens up a ripple effect where not only are you working on that one thing, you're working on many areas of your life, and you're starting to see many positive changes that come about.
You know, you talk a lot about the pinball life. And what advice would you give to someone who feels like they're bouncing from one thing to the next without a clear sense of purpose and direction, as you were before you found your three-legged stool and what those three legs should be?
Well, this is a question I love to get. And so when I think about this question, I think we are often told, or we hear, you're living on autopilot. you're doing this on autopilot. And to me, autopilot is something that I think we can all gravitate towards because we've all heard it. But when I think of autopilot and what that means, every pilot I know who, when they're putting the plane on autopilot, they're typically putting the plane in a positive direction of where they want to go. I don't think that's the way many of us are really living today. I think in behavior science, there's really two states that people live in. State one is the unconscious mind. State two is the conscious mind. And I think so many of us live in state one without a clear sense of focus and conscious engagement. And so as I started to think about what a better analogy might be or a better metaphor, when I was growing up as a kid, I loved the game of pinball. And as I think about the ball, and this whole purpose of this book is to really teach you how to be more intentional with your life, a pinball itself is completely the opposite. It is extremely unintentional in its movements. In fact, it is just, if you're not influencing it, it's just bouncing off of things. And to me, what a pinball life is when you're letting the game of pinball play you instead of you learning how to master the game. And it's a great analogy of how to look at life. So how do you go from living the majority of your life in state one to more of your life in state two and being conscious about the choices that you're making?
You know, you quote Mark Twain, and he, of course, famously said, 20 years from now, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than by the one things that you did. Have you been disappointed about the things you haven't done, where you are right now, and what's coming up next for you, in addition to more podcasts and more interviews and hopefully some more national attention? What is still on that list that is in your focus to live intentionally?
So I'm going to answer that in 1 second, because I didn't fully give an answer to your last question. Mm-hmm. So you asked me, how do you break out of living a pinball life? And I didn't answer the question. So I would encourage you to do a simple exercise, the importance versus urgent choice matrix. So if you think about, you've got two axes, and on one is importance, the other is urgency, and you think about a 4x4 quadrant and you start labeling it. If something that you need to do is important and urgent, then you need to do it. If something is urgent but it's not important, then you need to plan it. If something is important but not urgent, you need to delegate it. And if something fits neither of those quadrants, you need to eliminate it. And I think too many of us fall into this trap of busyness where we keep doing what feels important but it's really not. And so if you can start getting into the habit of focusing on that right-hand quadrant, it makes such a critical difference into how the choices in that choice architecture that you make. So on to your question about, I guess I went into this trying to help people cross the chasm of, instead of living the life they feel they ought to be living, how do you start living your ideal life, the life that you could be? And I think that that chasm can be really daunting, because oftentimes if you picture this as it's a mountainside and there's this large canvas where you can see the path that you're going on and you can see the mountaintop across from you and you can see where that leads you, the scariest part is that leap of faith between going from one to the other. And so I think I'm at a starting point where I am starting to give people some guidance on how to do that. But this is just one of the first steps. And so to me, there's a lot more books, courses, podcast episodes, different versions of the podcast that have yet to be released that are things I still want to do per Mark Twain.
You mentioned scary. I would look around the room and I would say each one of us has a passion project and we're a little bit afraid. And you talk about the courage muscles. And you talk about the importance of the concept of courage muscles. How can you build them? How does it work? And why is it important, not only in the world, but in initiating and following through on your intentional life?
So I have a good friend named Scott Simon, who's an author as well, and he wrote this great book called Scare Your Soul. And when I think about this topic, I think about his book, because everything that I'm talking about here with Passion Struck is doable in your life. But what ends up happening is so many of us get stuck in our own self-limiting beliefs. And so where courage really plays a role here is, I'm not talking like huge courage, like you have to go into a burning building. What I'm talking about is learning how to do small courage movements that slowly but surely expand your zone of what boundaries you're willing to explore. And that's what this whole courage muscle expansion is really about. It's like intentionality. To me, being intentional is like exercising a courage muscle. It takes courage to be intentional about how you want to treat someone. It takes courage to accept for yourself the boundaries on how you're willing to be treated and how other people in your world treat you. It takes courage to do a lot of these things. And to me, at its core, if you want to be more intentional about your passion, you have to learn how to be more courageous. And a good example of this is, for me, I mean, it might look like I love to do public speaking, but it's one of the things I really detest the most to do. And as this book was coming out and I knew I was going to be doing a lot more of it, I knew I had to start testing my courage muscles again. And so I decided to sign up for something that for me is extremely frightening and completely out of character for me, which is improv. And so for the past 18 months, I've been doing improv classes. And and it's one of these things where you have to set the expectation for yourself. For me, my expectation is I wanted to feel as uncomfortable as I possibly could. And it'll do that. And I also knew that, especially like the Q&A we're going to do today, that I needed to think quicker on my feet. And it happens a lot in podcasts that I'm on, or even when a podcast guest asks you something. So improv was a great way to do that. And I think Eugenie and what they're doing over at Greenlight Cinema is phenomenal. So I will give, if you've ever wanted to try improv and you want to do it in a no-pressure way, they're great.
Yes, and hats off to Eugenie. She's walking the red carpet in France right now for Fashion Week. Yay, Eugenie, Studio 12. You know, John, you're a lifelong learner. I think you actually do this so that you can take a PhD from each person you talk to. So I'm curious to know, what is the thing that someone has told you in these influential thinkers that was surprised you, awed you, took you to another level? Can you share some of that?
So it's interesting. We look at some of the people I profiled in the book were Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and Oprah Winfrey and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And there are lots of those, but there are other people in the book that I call everyday heroes who aren't those big names. But the commonality that I found across all of them is that those who really break out have a constant pursuit of reinvention, meaning they know the world around them is changing. And it's interesting. You think of someone like Jeff Bezos, and it would have been easy for him to reach a certain level and to just say, I'm going to coast. But he didn't do that. He constantly pushes the envelope of Amazon, but when he was there, but also for himself personally. And it wasn't only my work that discovered this. I happened to interview a guy named Dan Schwabel, who's a New York Times bestselling author. He works for this think tank called Future Workplace. And in addition to the hundreds of people I've interviewed, he interviewed 1,200. And we were talking, and he came to the same conclusion. It's this constant pursuit of reinvention, especially in the world today as rapidly as it's changing. I mean, one of the things I get often asked by kids my son's age, you know, is what do I do in this age of AI, robotics, everything else? Well, when I was starting my career, the forces against me were different, but I was feeling the same thing that they're feeling now. And I knew if I wanted to stay on top of it and to get ahead, I needed to be ahead of what was coming. So I always tried to live my life by looking 4 to 5 years in the future and looking for skill sets that I needed to have that I didn't, that I needed to learn to do, so that I was always staying ahead of my peer group. And I think that there are things that are always going to be needed, especially things like emotional intelligence and how to interact with humans, because no matter what we do, humans are not going to be replaced. But I think we're going to have to learn, as technology becomes more profound in our lives, even than it is today, how to overcome the way people feel when they're having to deal with this technology.
You know, I'm curious to know, you have four pillars that you talk about in the book: the mindset shift, the behavior shifts, deliberate action, intrinsic motivation. And I'm wondering what you feel people overlook that you would like to point out to them that they might not see on the first go through the book. Because I've read this book now 3 times. And every time I read it, it reveals itself a little bit more. So,
well, I would go into one of the principles in the book that I get asked about the most, and it's a chapter I call The Mosquito Auditor. And to me, this is an important principle, because what I'm really talking about here is if you want to get further in your life, one of the things that is commonly the biggest barrier to doing that is the people who you surround yourself with in your life. Meaning, they could be family members, they could be your best friends, they could be relatives, they could be coworkers, and oftentimes they're toxic and you don't even realize it. So this chapter, I tried to make it fun. So I tried to figure out what's a way that I could approach this. And I happened to be listening to a radio show, and the announcer came on and said, "What's the most dangerous animal on the planet?" I've already given it away. But people were saying it's this type of snake, or it's this type of shark, or this or that. And the answer, it's the mosquito. And just like a mosquito, which is an invisible influence oftentimes in our life, so are these people who are the most toxic. And so I came up with 3 different mosquitoes that I describe. There's the invisible suffocator, which is that person in your life who's the half glass, half empty type of person, who's always telling you why something is not going to work out. You get this great promotion opportunity at work, well, it's going to have all these downsides, so you can't take it. There's the PETA, which is the pain in the ass. And then there's this one called the bloodsucker. And if anyone's a fan of Terry Cole's work, I love her books. She wrote The Boundary Boss. She's got another great book coming out here shortly. She has something in there called a boundary destroyer, and that's really what a bloodsucker is. And that they're that person that wants whatever they want that makes them better, and they're going to drain your swamp in order to get it. So the quicker you can start recognizing what those mosquitoes are, and I just gave 3, there are many more, the more opportunity you have to put up proper boundaries in your own life to ward against them.
John, what haven't I asked you before we open up to the audience for questions? John, what haven't I asked you about the book that you want to share as a takeaway with this crowd tonight, your first book signing here at Book and Bottle?
I'm surprised you didn't ask me, is there someone I had on the podcast who emulates what's in Passion Struck?
Is there someone on the podcast who emulates? Listen, I am a very good trained monkey. Is there someone on the podcast who emulates what?
Well, I'm going to give an answer that you're not expecting.
We'll let you interview yourself. You're going to have an AI person here. I love John.
It'd be easy for me to pick someone famous. I mean, and when I was first thinking about this, I was going to pick Oksana Masters. You might have heard of her recently because she just won 2 gold medals in the Paralympic Games. And she is a phenomenal example. But I'm going to highlight someone I had on the podcast that none of you have probably ever heard of. His name is Nate Dukes. And Nate today is a pastor in his church he's the youth pastor, and he's transforming the lives of troubled youth where he lives. But it's the backstory of Nate that I think is the most important. Nate got out of college, and he got into this great startup opportunity. He was making more money than he had ever made in his entire life. And then he started to get inflicted by different vices. He was drinking too much. He was gambling. He was doing drugs. And in order to pay for his habits, he started to steal money from the very startup that he helped to found. And it got so bad that he ended up getting kicked out of his own company. He was trying to escape his life. He stole a vehicle and was on his way two states away, didn't really have a destination on where to go, fell asleep at the wheel and was pulled over by the police, ended up spending 6 months in jail. And when I was interviewing him, and he was talking about how he rebuilt his life, he said something that was so profound. And here you have someone who has hit the most rock bottom I could possibly think of. He goes, the greatest opportunity you have when you hit rock bottom is that you can build your life back brick by brick in the way that you want to. And that's exactly what he did. And so my favorite stories on the Passion Struck podcast are stories of everyday heroes that any of us can relate to. I find, you know, I've had Gary Vee on the show, and Gary is great, but it's hard at this point to picture yourself living his life. I think all of us could see ourselves making a bunch of bad mistakes like Nate did and hitting rock bottom. But to me, the beautiful aspect of his story, and it's actually one of the last stories I tell in the book to summarize the book, is how he rebuilt his life using the principles that I outline in the book.
It's fabulous. Well, John, as I can say from personal reasons, I'm thrilled that I met you. I'm thrilled that I read the book. I would never have continued on with Radio St. Pete, my passion project, if it wasn't for you. And I want to thank all of you for coming. And so now I'm going to open the room to questions for John. Please share your name with us. Yes, please.
Hi, I'm Marilyn. John and I work together at Catalina Marketing. But would you explain the cover of the book for everyone?
Okay, so this is actually a funny story. For those of you who haven't published a book, as an author, you think that you have a lot of liberties when it comes to the cover design. And what I found with my publisher was that wasn't the case. And so the first versions of the book that were coming out, the cover had pictures of flowers on it, budding flowers. There was another one that had an eggshell that broken open with footsteps that were going across the page. There was one that had lightning bolts, and the one that they wanted to go with was a paper airplane on a yellow cover that was going up and going through the words Passion Struck. And although they were interesting ideas, I didn't think it captured the book. So I went to my publisher and I said, none of those are going to work for me. And they said, well, then you're not going to work for us. And I said, well, can I have one more try? And they said, you can have a try, but you have to pay for it with your own money and come back to us with something, and then we'll decide whether we agree with it or not. So I went out and I hired four different design people, kind of gave the spirit of the idea that I was trying to come up with, which is I wanted to show that, you know, at the start of someone's journey, there isn't a lot of passion. There, oftentimes you're stuck and you don't know where to go in life. And that's what I wanted this blue area to kind of resemble, is, you know, you just don't know where your life is going. And then you start taking some steps. And as you do, it's activating more and more energy to the point that the more courage muscles you're exposing, the more intentional you are, it starts catching fire, and then it starts building and building upon each action that you're taking to the point that it eventually erupts into a passion-struck life. And so that was the symbolism I was looking for, and this wasn't the first drawing that the gentleman did, but it was close enough that we were able to work on it and get it to this. And I'm happy to say we've won a couple book cover contests. So very
question.
Very happy
thank
about
you.
That. So thank you.
Great question. Questions? Well, I'm going to actually ask a question. How many people in this room have a passion project that they have been thinking about and haven't yet started? Would anybody like to share that? Holly, Holly Hargett is here, one of my editors, who wrote for me at Paradise News and has appeared on Radio St. Pete. Holly, just share. I think that we should share a little bit because that's why we're here.
I've been thinking about a children's book, so yes.
Good. Passion project. I saw a hand here. Yes.
Hi, I'm Carrie. You were speaking earlier of the universe kind of just yelling at you and yelling at you and yelling at you to do the thing that you're meant to do. So there's a new friend of mine. Last week was my birthday. She gifted me Passion Struck.
Oh, thank you.
And so I'm not done yet, but I've been reading it since. But people in my life come to me because they have things to share, and I help them through it. I help with mindset goals, mental health, nutrition, wellness, and so it's been a passion of mine to become a mental health and wellness coach.
Wow, good
so
for you.
I'll be launching that this year, and I'm beginning a board certified program too.
Very good, very good.
Congratulations.
Someone else who will share their passion project?
I have two.
Yes.
So I'm an ex-ICU nurse, primary care provider, nurse practitioner now. And it's always been a dream when you live in St. Pete and you realize how much of a homeless population we have here, because you just kind of wonder when you move here, like, why are there so many homeless in St. Petersburg? And you find out it's because of all the different programs that we have here for the homeless. And that's why people migrate to this area, because we do have so many different resources for them, exactly. So I'm a nurse practitioner. I've got a respiratory therapist friend. I have a physical therapy friend. I have this friend, that friend, x-ray, this and that. Like, if you just had all the money in the world, we could just have this big bus and we all get on it. Nobody needs any money. We can just care for the population and be able to provide healthcare to the underserved in the area and people that don't even want to go out and get care for themselves. And the other side is I have a very large passion for helping women. And so it's always been a dream of mine to work in a capacity where I'm able to help women from mental health to physical health to nutrition, well-being, all of the things with the knowledge and resources and just the years of experience that I have. I just feel like I would definitely be a good resource for these women. And it's just, honestly, it's finding the place where that is something that you can do, because you don't, you know, you want to pay your rent, and you can't be like, well, I help women for free.
But I do want to introduce you. I want to introduce you to a new woman here. For those of you who have not gone to Tiny Buttons over on Central Avenue, this is it's brand new. They're working with they work with CASA. They work with Heels to Heels. So
CASA's amazing.
Yeah, CASA's amazing. Good. Thank you for sharing. Somebody else. Questions for John or share your passion project? Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
Andrea, licensed mental health therapist, not currently practicing. So if someone like me who's now in corporate America wants to reignite their passion, I'm going to read your book. Can't believe I haven't yet, but going to next book, I'm going to have it. You said take one step. What else can you offer in regards to that? When you're already hearing it, you know you need to be doing something else. Mm-hmm. You know, taking that one step and even beyond. What else do you have?
Good question.
Well, I think that I think, Andrea, what I didn't do that I should have done more of is, once I heard that calling, I kept putting it on the shelf, and I kept procrastinating on it. And it wasn't until I really gave myself the time to really percolate kind of my DNA, like what was going to, like, I had to go back and relearn my strengths. I had been doing all these things in corporate America that really weren't exploiting my, I thought they were my core strengths, but they really weren't my core strengths. So it really came down to what could I do to fulfill the mission that I wanted to? And then I had to start thinking about it. Did I want to do it in a way that was one-on-one? Meaning, did I want to make this a coaching business or you could be a counselor? And I thought if I did that, I could impact this many people, but it would prohibit me from doing these creative things that I wanted to do. So I had started to have to ask all these questions. But the first thing was, what is my uniqueness and my ability to serve another human being? Like, what is, because I think that's the starting point, is, and I cover it in the Mosquito, not in the Mission Angler chapter, but it's, I think we all have a uniqueness. And I'll tell you this story. I had this gentleman on the podcast. I can't think of his name right now. I've had 400 people on the podcast, so. But he is in charge of the Catholic University's business school. And earlier in his life, he was 16 or 17 years old, grew up in Sweden, didn't have a clue what he wanted to do, was really struggling. And his parents said, well, maybe you should consider applying to the Swiss Guard. He thought, there's no way I'm ever going to become a Swiss Guard. Not only did he become a Swiss Guard, 8 months later, he was in the inner circle protecting Pope John Paul II. And he said that the Pope, when you were around him, even though you think of him almost like a president where he's got all these obligations, he said when you were in front of him, he made you feel like the rest of the world melted away. And it was like he was looking right into my soul, and he knew I was lost. And he said at that point, he said, you were put on here for a very specific reason. He goes, every single one is, and it's to fulfill this mission that only you can fulfill through the uniqueness that, if you're a believer in God, that God has given you. And so it is your journey to exploit that in the best way that you can to serve others, because that's where you're going to feel the most fulfillment in your life. And to me, that's a great example of it.
John, you also, I want to address this because you wrote something about Angela Duckworth that I think speaks to this, and that's grit and self-control and the psychology of perseverance. That is a big step, isn't it? Share with us a little bit about that.
Well, it's interesting. I did a podcast interview with Angela, and if any of you don't know much about Angela Duckworth, she is one of the smartest human beings you could possibly interview. It's intimidating to interview her because she is so smart. She just puts you on your toes. So I was trying to get her to agree with me on my definition of intentionality, which she would not do. But she reworded it in her so. She's if people don't know her backstory, Angela, before she became this author that she is now and the behavior scientist that she is, she graduated from college and spent the next years of her life teaching in inner city schools, not really understanding what her purpose was, then was a consultant and kind of figured out that she needed to go back and get her PhD. So I believe she's a Rhodes Scholar. She ended up becoming a MacArthur Genius, which is the highest award that they give for people in her profession. But what she came back to me with is, when you think of intentionality, the behavioral science concept that she teaches is self-control. And what I write about in the book is, when I was at the Naval Academy, I was there at probably the worst time in the Academy's history, and I probably had the worst job that you could possibly have. So my class, I got elected to be the Vice Honor Chairman, which normally is a job that you don't do very much in, because really what this job is about is holding midshipmen who are guilty of honor offenses up to a standard. And typically, when I was there, the standard was black and white. If you found someone guilty, you were going to dismiss them. So the year was going as I thought it would, and we had maybe three or four of these honor boards my entire first semester. But I got back from Christmas that time of year to find out that the Academy had just experienced its largest cheating scandal in the history of the Naval Academy. And so I'm thrust into this situation where literally half of the class underneath me had cheated on this exam. And the superintendent made, I thought, a calculated error when one of the people who had gotten this exam came forward. This person was ranked number two in his class and said, "I got this test. I'm coming forward to tell you that it came to me through many different sources, but I didn't realize it was going to be the exact test, but I used it and I aced the exam." He got kicked out. And so after he got kicked out, every single person started to cover their butts about everything. And so what ended up happening was it really showed me that through that example about self-control, we have the ability to control our actions. And those midshipmen had the choice that they could use this gouge to get ahead, or they could have pushed it to the side and taken another path. And I think that's what intentionality comes down to. Oftentimes, it's these decisions that we make. And to me, self-control is really realizing if you're not on the path to becoming what you want or having the outcomes that you want in your life, what do you need to do differently to change your path?
Well, on that note, if there are there any other questions before we get busy signing books? I want to thank Book and Bottle, Andy and team. I want to thank all of you for coming, John Miles, for this book, the excellent questions. And I hope that you'll tune in to John at whatever you get your podcast. We're on RadioSt.Pete.com on Thursday nights. If you do pound John Miles, you'll hear his original interview. And I want to thank you for the opportunity tonight to host with John on this terrific, terrific interview. Thank you, John.
Thank you.